Accession number 8171, Reel 9.
Mr. Metalman, Reel 9.
Well, the panzers came across, and there was a ravine in front of us. We saw them coming, and then they were dipping down into the ravine. Now that we knew they were just before us, and they were still coming. There were hundreds. The whole situation was of chaos, of fire, of fear. It was wet. One was wet with it, and one was dirty. There was shouting going on, wounded were lying here, things were blowing up, ammunition was somewhere hit and it exploded around us, I don't know. Now, we saw them coming up, I saw them coming up. I was not a gunner. Being the driver, I was responsible for handing the ammunition to the gunner. To the loader. There was always a gunner and a loader at the cannon. And it was my job, together with another one, to fetch the ammunition which we had close by the bunker and bring them to the cannon. So I was always kind of half bent down and rushing around with grenades. But the air was getting rather full of iron, as we said. Contained quite a bit of dangerous iron. And now the first Russian tanks, they came up from the ravine and nobody could stop them. I don't think that afterwards that I saw that any Russian tank had blown up or was hit or was incapacitated. They came straight for us, and I remember all what I did, and my mates as well. We went into the bunker. We just ran away. There was no heroic death as such. And I think our cannon was hit. There was some big blow up. But anyway, I disappeared. And I was the only one who really got into the bunker. Doesn't say much for me, perhaps, does it? I don't know. I was lying there. And now I heard the roar of the panzer, the earth shook, the panzers just were going over me and going past, and I think the gun had been hit and that the two mates were killed there, the other two mates, the loader and the gunner. But I'm not quite sure about that, because there was so much chaos. This went on for maybe an hour. Definitely not more. I heard the voices. I knew enough Russian. I knew there were Russian infantry now up there. But it was always on the move, and nobody came in. I was sitting there, frightened. I remember there was still a little bit of a glow in the stove. I just sat next to that little cannon stove, which was about 1.5 foot high, and it was around a diameter of 10 inches, perhaps. And the stove pipe leading out to the top. And we had straw in there. It was quite comfortable, but I was sitting there and didn't dare to come out and look out. I just decided I stay here and, well, come what may, what can I do about it anyway? And as I said, after about an hour, it got quiet. And my stove, I think, had gone out, and I felt very miserable in every respect. And then I decided I must have a look. At first I called a little bit, and was no reply. And I wonder what happened to the others. I was full of fear, I must admit. I put the sack away, and there were two of my mates were lying in the ditch, dead. I couldn't really get out. I had to move one and had to climb over the other. They were stone dead, all right. And then I looked out and there was nothing. It was eerie. It was quiet. Far away, I heard some roaring and some shooting. But, well, as I see now, the Russians had broken through. The main battle had been done. There wasn't much shooting going on. Now they were going. They had broken through the main line. And surely they were going somewhere. I didn't know where they were going. the concept of closing in behind the Sixth Army or so. I had no strategic thinking about that. I didn't give any thought to that. So I heard some excuse me some noises, some crying, some shouting. There were many wounded and many dead. In the vicinity, I think, just looking out of my... I was now standing in my trench. The trench was going to... was breast high, perhaps. I could see many dead and many of them wounded, badly wounded, because there was nobody walking around. And that was the scene, and a tank must have rolled right over our cannon. Our cannon was just smashed to bits. A tank must have really gone over the whole lot. And the same happened to the Romanian cannons, and the position was completely demolished, our main battle line. And there I was. I looked out, and nothing. Nothing. It was eerie. I got out of the trench, and some, all my German mates were dead, stone dead, so I couldn't do anything about it. But there were quite a few Romanians, and they were shouting for help and that I should come, and mostly they were shouting in Romanian, and then they realized I was German, shouted in German. And I realized there were many very badly wounded, and whatever I did, I wasn't a medical man, I had no medical equipment whatsoever. Maybe it doesn't say much about my human value as a Christian or so, but I just did not give any help whatsoever. I realized there was too much, and I wanted now to save my life, and I had so many other things to do, I realized, if I wanted to save my life, so I just ignored it. I remembered that the previous night I was on guard duty, that I had chopped some wood further on. We had it was a little bit of a tree. We could chop wood on there, and we used that for kindling wood and just wood for our little stove. So I thought, well, the first thing first, I must get that stove going, because it was getting very cold in there, and it must have been about freezing temperature that morning. The Russians, the tanks they had made, they had churned up the earth. Oh, the whole thing was in a terrible state. I didn't see any Russian dead. So I went, crawled in again, I got a coat and put it on and went over to the place where I knew my firewood was lying. And yes, there it was. I picked it up and got an armful, and when I stood there with my armful, I heard a motor, an engine. And I thought, what's going on now? And I just looked, and then a jeep came out of the ravine, a Russian jeep. And I stood there with my armful of wood. And it had a job to get over the edge of the ravine onto the flat where I now was standing, but it managed it. And the earth was churned up in such a way that it obviously had difficulty to drive in any certain direction. Once it was in a rut, it stayed in the rut, and it was an open jeep. And next to the driver, a soldier, a Russian soldier, was halfway sitting, standing up and pointing out to him which way to go. Here, there, there. So he wanted to tell him, if you go here, it's much better. There's so much water over there, or whatever it was. And at the back were two Russian officers. And they came for me, straight towards me. And I stood there with my arm full of wood. I didn't laugh then, I can assure you. I just looked at them and thought, well, that's it now. It's either the end of your life or whatever. And they came to me, and they must have thought, no German soldier can be so stupid to stand there. They must have thought it was a Russian soldier, because the two in the front totally ignored me, and one of the officers sitting there gave me a kind of a sign as whether the rough ride was hurting his bum. He put his hand down and pointed out to his bum, more or less as whether he was going to say, bloody rough ride, mate. And they kind of waved. I think with the one free hand I had, I kind of did put my hand in the air, put my arm in the air, and they waved and looked quite friendly at me, and they were gone. And I thought, crumbs. Now here I am. With my wood, they have just passed. They don't even take you. They don't shoot you. And I went back into my bunker and made a fire. And I remember I came out because at first I had a good look at the chimney, which was about a yard out of the ground, I think. It was smoking badly, and I thought, well, if there's anything that can give you away here, it's smoke. But then I thought, no, I must have warmth. And then after a time, I think I had enough dry wood, and I had a good fire going, and I just sat there, and I could take my things off again and sit there in my shirt sleeves because it was comfortable and warm. Also, I heard some of the wounded outside, the wounded soldiers. I just shut my mind and just didn't want to hear. And now it was getting colder. Later on, then I found they all had died, because when I walked away at the night, well, I'll tell the whole story, then I heard no more whining and crying. So there was plenty of food, because now I was only one. Before that we had five, and there were so many. I went over to the Romanian position and looked at their places. There was plenty of food. There was butter, and had some bacon and some other meat, and tins of this and tins of that, army rations, and some good stuff. Went over to where the officers had been, the Romanian officers, and there I found too that they had much better food than the ordinary soldiers. So I took the best of the food. Then I looked at the rifles. I had a very bad rifle, I remember, so I looked at all my mates' rifles, and I knew which one had the best anyway, and I took that one. I took enough ammunition. At that time, I wore a Romanian fur hat, a black fur hat, which was very nice. You could pull it over the ears. And I took a Romanian fur jacket from an officer, and I think I looked rather smart. But then I got the fire really going, had something to eat. I think I even fried something. And went to sleep. Straw, it was comfortable. And I really slept well. When I think of it now, the horror outside and how I could sleep well. But under conditions like that, I suppose there's an instinct that you do just the right thing in order to keep your very self alive. That at that moment, to me at least, it seemed, even if it doesn't sound Christian, the most important thing, to keep myself alive. That is a truth. I don't want to sit here and try to make a heroic story out of it. It wasn't. So I slept, and when I woke up, I put the sack away. I realized it was dark, because we had kept the German time. The German armies in Russia kept German Berlin time. That meant that at that time in November at 3 o'clock in the afternoon it was dark, and it gets light around 6 o'clock, something like that. So I woke up and it was dark, and I realized, well, I gotta go. I can't stand here. I can't just stand here. The Russians have gone through, and there are no Russians, and I realized the wounded had died because of the cold or of their wounds. What I did is I went through the pockets of my mates and took their pay books and some other little things, like one had a good ball pen, so I took all that. And I left them. I made no attempt to bury them, because it would have been hard work. It was wet, and there was water and a little bit of ice and snow, and I would have had a short spade, but to dig graves for for several. It's a major, would have been a major undertaking. I just left it. And it was dark. I got all my things. I had a little tornister, as we call it, a little pack, you know, where you got your army pack. I think I took the best boots of one of them, tried them out in comfort, which were the best boots, fur boots, German winter boots, that were nice and warm. And off I went, and it was a star night, and I could pride myself on it that I knew something about the stars. I knew how to find the polar star by the great wagon, and I knew exactly. So I knew where there was north, and I knew that where I had come from, where my home was, that was west. And I made no mistake there. I wanted to go west. No real plan involved, but west was, in my view, the safest route, because now I was standing there, I could have gone anywhere, in any direction. But I went west.
Were you the only living person around?
I was the only living person around. There was nobody. They must have taken some prisoners, I think, some Romanian prisoners, the Russians, but I've taken them all with them, because the hour or so I had hidden myself in the bunker, all these things, they must have happened out there. I don't know what has happened, because I never looked out once. I was too frightened. If I would have looked out, they would have taken me prisoner too, I suppose, or shot me, I don't know. There was plenty of shooting going on too when I was there. Rifle shooting or so, whether some of them were shot or whether some of them put up resistance. I have no idea. I did not put up any resistance. So I started walking, which means not walking on the road to the west. There was no road to the west. It was just across fields. And that country is steppe country, a prairie in summer. We call it steppe, the Russian steppe. So it's rather flat, and very few trees, hardly any hedgerows. So you just go west, just west, over fields. Well, of course, there were fields, yes, but sometimes you notice you were touching across furrows. Must have been some sort of a potato field or whatever it was. And I don't know for how many days, for how many nights I walked. I think two or three. And during the day, I always, when I found a barn or something like that, or in a village where I realized, I looked always for burned out villages, and I was sure that there was nobody in there, and hid myself in there and slept during the day. Sometimes it was very uncomfortable, but mostly I found some straw somewhere in some sort of barns or some sort of burned-out houses, and I had that fur coat, and I slept okay. And then in the night, I walked again. And then I remember that was one morning when dawn broke that I was looking for a place that I realized from the other side there was somebody walking towards this little hamlet or village, whatever it was. And by the whole movement, he must have been about a kilometer or so away, I could see that most probably it was a German soldier. It was too far away to really recognize it. But, and then I saw that he had seen me. And we both hesitated, kind of, but looked at each other, which gave me the feeling, ah, he is not sure, the same as I am not sure. And most probably it's a German soldier, but I couldn't be sure. I put my arm up once, and he put his arm up. And I moved closer to the village, and he moved closer to the village. And I think when we were apart, 400, 500 yards, it's difficult to say, when you were in shouting distance, he shouted. He said something like, "Hello." And I shouted back, "Hallo." And then he said in German, "Bist du Deutscher?" And I said, "Ja, ich bin Deutscher. Ich komme rüber," or something like that, he said. I'll come over then. So we met. And strange meeting. When I think of it now and look at it from the poetical point of view, one could have said Dr. Livingstone, I presume. We shook hands. His name was Fritz. I said, I'm Henry. That was it. I said, where have you come from? He said about the, told me about the unit. I knew about the unit. It was part of our 22nd Panzer Division. And he roughly had the same fate. All of them were dead, and he was the only survivor. So, okay, what are we going to do? Well, what are we going to do? Where? What do I know? What did he know? We just knew nothing. But the only thing really we knew was to go west. And we hadn't seen, I hadn't seen any units. I think he said he had passed the village and there were Russians in the troops, and he had gone around it and told me about his difficulties. And so we walked on, and I think all together we were together then 4 or 5 other days and nights. And I remember especially one morning, dawn broke, and we had to look for something, and there was a haystack and a village not all that far away. And by looking at the village, we thought there were Russian troops in there. But we didn't dare to come too close. And we stayed away from it. But we went to this haystack. And snow had fallen now. There was several inches of snow was covering the ground. I remember we arrived at the haystack, and then we decided now to run around the haystack several times and run away from it and come back in order that nobody should see that the footsteps had led to a certain place at the haystack, and that was it. Then, if somebody would have come around through the day, they would have suspected that somebody is in that haystack. After we had done that, we pulled out hay, and so that we both could crawl in there and lie next to each other. Then we pulled the hay back in order to camouflage the entrance as best as we could. And it was nice and cozy and comfortable. And we decided now to stay the day in that haystack. Of course, we had something to eat. He had good food with him. And in a way, we felt healthy. It was good winter weather. By that time, there had been snowing, but it had become much clearer. The fog had gone. The wet fog had gone. And young soldiers, he was slightly younger than I, even Fritz, you quickly overcome your desperate situation, because if I think now of the situation I was in, surely it was a desperate situation. But one didn't see it like that. One lived just from hour to hour, from day to day. You had something good in your stomach, you have a mate now, you are lying warm in the hay here, and tonight is another night when you start walking. But now, what happened while we were in there, I think he woke me up. He said, hey, listen. Many voices, much going on outside. We both listened, and some Russian platoon or whatever had arrived there and was camping at the haystack. We also realized they had a field kitchen, because we could smell it. Nice smell of food was coming into our hay, and I mean, we were lying in this next to each other, hardly could move, with our feet to the outside of the haystack, about a yard or so between our feet and the outside of the haystack. We had taken our boots off. It was very nice and warm and comfortable. But now what was going on out there? We realized they had horses with them, and we felt that they were taking hay from the haystack. The whole thing was shaking. We heard the horses, the sounds horses make, and we realized they were turning up there with their mess tins, and that they were actually sitting against the haystack. We felt it and heard it. The voices, they were, well, a yard away from our feet, and we were in there. Crumbs, what are we going to do now? How do we get out of this? And we thought now, and then we saw at night, of course they didn't move away at night. We wanted to walk away at night, but of course now we couldn't. and we saw a great big fire going outside, and we thought, oh Christ, if they set this haystack alive, is that in there? That won't be funny. So what could we do? We just stayed. And I think we stayed there for 3 days and 3 nights. And the situation became desperate. You can imagine the lavatory situation. We had to relieve ourselves. You didn't move. We had to be quiet. We had food, but any rustle with paper or so, they were so nearby, always a yard away from us. We couldn't afford to cough or clear our throats, and we could only when there was plenty of noise outside. Then we made our own noises, I think. But it was getting smelly in there. It was horrible. And was it 2 or 3 nights? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it was getting to that point that we decided we're coming out. We're coming out. This is no good. We'll die here. And if you don't move at all, you get stiff, and you get into a horrible state, in a horrible physical state, and with it also in a horrible state of mind. So while we were kind of discussing now, well, we get out in the morning. I think that's what we said, in the morning, as soon as it gets daylight or what. Because you could see whether it was day or night, a little bit of light was coming through. And we were expecting that a little bit of light was coming through the top now, because they were continuously taking hay away. They would have caught us like rats there if they would have carried on to feed their horses with our hay. So I think it was like that. We decided, let day come, and then we get out. That might be the best time. Never good to do it afternoon or evening, because soldiers are wide awake and they might do something to you. In the morning they were always they are always sleepy. We knew it by our own conditions. In the morning you are much nicer than in the evening. In the evening you do wild things, and quickly you shoot somebody if you feel like it. In the morning you are always more considerate. That was our experience. Anyway, there we were. But then suddenly got quiet. Nothing. We thought, well, now what's this? Have they gone? Of course we couldn't. We couldn't even turn in our thing, lying next to each other. We couldn't turn. We had to come out feet first. So we never had dared once to put to look out or so. We couldn't. And early in the morning, I think, I don't know what was the time. It doesn't really matter. Daylight had already been there for an hour or so. We decided, well, out. Now either we get caught or we're out. But we were coming out. And I was the first one who went out. And I remember I had somehow managed to put my jackboots on and was pushing my way out of it. And I thought, well, if they are still there, I don't know, somebody will grab my jackboots and will pull me out of the haystack. But I crawled out all the way. Fritz came out. We stood there. We hardly could believe it. There were remnants of, we could see there had been many soldiers. They had camped there. There were still some sacks and whatnot lying around. But not a human being in sight. We were so stiff. We ran around like little children around the haystack. I think we were even shouting, "Yoo-hee!" And then we decided to have a good meal. We made a little fire. Now there was hay. The Russians had left some firing material there. We made a good fire. I think we had a good fry up. We were laughing. We were in a great mood. And, well, now what? Going west, young man. Going west. That's what we decided. That was the only way we could do to continue.